Welcome back again, folks, on this Tuesday, the 10th day of October now, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Collin. Once again, the big story, arguably, is still the continued escalation, that's the way I'm going to put it, of World War III, this case on the Middle Eastern front, and all of the stuff that looks like a massive setup, not like we haven't seen that before, but as more and more information comes out, there's just so many more things that either reveal an outright lie or, more likely, a bigger picture intended to escalate and draw the whole world into a conflict that's rapidly turning into something that certainly looks at this point like it could go nuclear. I guess if Putin won't take the nuclear bait, maybe they can find somebody else that will. But let me begin with this story, courtesy of a number of outlets, but I like Kristen Taylor's take for the Gateway Pundit. There was no 3 a.m. in the morning wake-up call for the fake senile puppet president. The White House admitted that, a little bit late to the party, but they finally realized there was an attack going on in Israel. It came at 2:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and that was 3 hours later than those that were even watching the Waystream news knew what was going on. And then, after a good night's sleep, the senile guy was finally told, better pretend at least to be president for a while. He convened a call at 8:15 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. No doubt after some bacon and eggs and maybe a pamper check. Says the story, the Biden regime briefed reporters on background Saturday afternoon after that Hamas terrorist attack on Israel that featured what was called a senior administration official sick speaking on the record, but not at least for attribution by name. The official casually tossed out the claim that the imitation White House first became aware of the attack at around 2:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time and that the Biden Fuhrer convened a call, isn't that nice, with officials around 8:15 a.m., almost 6 hours later. But there's no mention of the 80-year-old senile dude being woke up in the middle of the night, and I guess that's the only proper way to put it, because that's the only word that really applies in his case. Because, after all, let's be honest, folks, who would care what he had to say about the situation anyway? You'd get just as much information by waking up your pet hamster and asking him what he thought about the attack. And let's not forget, folks, if there was any real intelligence, pun intended, in Washington, they'd have known about it long before the senile guy hit his nappy time in the afternoon, even. And that reminds me of one more story, folks, that I think is a good way to set things up for today, particularly when it comes to the incompetent drinking the Kool-Aid of the evil. Former CIA Director John Brennan, there's an evil one for you, has weighed in regarding the incredible incompetence that allowed this oh-so-unexpected surprise attack to happen without anybody being aware of it for literally days, weeks, maybe months in advance. Even though the U.S. has been giving away billions in cash and, of course, high-tech military equipment to terrorists for, well, we know how long now. Not just the worst military debacle in American history in Afghanistan, but more recently, $6 billion to the Ayatollah in Iran. So it really is, I would say, disgusting to hear John Brennan pontificate about what he called intelligence failures. How about 51 so-called intelligence officials being unable to identify whether the laptop from hell needed covering up or not? There's a surprise attack for you. They all said, pay no attention to that laptop behind the curtain. The FBI will make sure it stays hidden away. Because while they were claiming it was Russia, 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 it was really, as we now know, treason, treason, treason. So let's listen to this guy pontificate a bit about intelligence failures and how they could be co-opted by misinformation. Oh, how ironic. By the way, he appears here with Jen Psaki. She's getting her payoff now from MSNBC. The idiot redhead who preceded Karine Jean-Pierre as the spokesliar for the biggest criminal administration, so far at least, in American history. Or you could say it's Obama's third term. Speaking of what he called the operation against Israel, he said,
and Israeli intelligence seemed to be caught totally unawares. Mm. This had to take months and months of planning. I think it demonstrates Hamas really has learned how to carry out this type of planning and not have the Israelis become aware of it.
Or just maybe, folks, they had help.
So, again, the Israeli intelligence is mainly Shin Bet, which is the domestic intelligence agency, as well as the Israeli military intelligence that has responsibility for Gaza. But it does raise questions about whether or not Israeli sources, both human and technical sources, have been compromised by Hamas, and the Israelis were being fed false information and gave them a false sense of complacency.
Did you catch that? Who could imagine so-called intelligence agencies, well, maybe Donald Trump can at this point anyway, feeding the American people and those that are relying on that so-called intelligence product anything that would be false? Like, say, bought and paid for Hillary Clinton propaganda, and as we now know, crap from Christopher Steele, etc.
and the Israelis were being fed false information and gave them a false sense of complacency. Because there were just so many Hamas militants that were involved in this, again, it took many, many months in order to plan this.
He almost sounds cocky about it, doesn't he? Then he goes on to talk about how they might have been fed,
you know, false information into Israeli intelligence headquarters, as well as some of their technical systems. They might have, you know, found out where they were and then intentionally putting information into that that, again, did not give Israel a sense that this planning was taking place.
In other words, if you believe that the laptop from hell was Russian propaganda rather than a criminal enterprise that took over the United States, well, hey, maybe you'll fall for this one, too. You think we can get away with it one more time?
Some of the military tactics used here, I mean, this was advanced military tools that were used here in these attacks. Was that surprising to you? What does that tell you about Hamas's capabilities or who may or may not have been helping them?
All right, I'll resist the urge to put in a laugh track here and say, can you believe she actually had the chutzpah to ask that question? But really, I guess it does kind of make sense, even though we know we'll never get an honest answer. If the guys who just gave tens of billions of dollars of high-tech, top-of-the-line U.S. military weaponry to the Taliban and have been arming and training other terrorists worldwide for years can't get away with it, why, who can? And ask about the likelihood, your host will say, of escalation. Brennan did say about the only thing he said that was really true.
I'm very concerned. I think the situation is going to get worse before it gets better.
He didn't actually come right out and say it, but you could hear it anyway. Mission accomplished. I guess it is appropriate today to follow that up with this piece courtesy of RT.com and Dmitry Medvedev, who continues to say things that the American press doesn't want to report on, the weapons that Kyiv's Western backers have actively supplied to Ukraine, and of course the big guy no doubt got his cut on too, have now found their way, he suggests, to Hamas militants and are, quote, now being actively used in Israel, said former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev in a Telegram post on Monday, adding that any future military hardware supplied to Kyiv could very well end up on the same black market as well. Said Medvedev, it will only get worse from here, predicting that the world should, quote, expect missiles, tanks, and even planes from Kyiv on the black market soon, unquote. And if you haven't figured that out yet, folks, you really just haven't been paying attention. His words came, said RT, amid rumors that Hamas militants that control the Gaza Strip, at least for now, had gotten their hands on some U.S.-made weaponry before the attack on Israel over the last weekend. No solid evidence confirming these claims, says RT, has emerged so far. However, an unverified video circulating online showed a Palestinian militant displaying assorted U.S.-made pieces, including a standard-issue M136 anti-tank grenade launcher, while thanking Ukrainians for the weapons. Said Medvedev, corrupt authorities in Ukraine would, quote, steal everything in sight, and he added that Western weapons sent to Ukraine would soon begin to fuel conflicts in other parts of the world, just like the treasure trove of high-tech weaponry that Americans famously left behind in Afghanistan during their botched, hasty, and Biden-like withdrawal from that country in 2021. From there, I think it's appropriate to spend a few minutes on a piece by historian Victor Davis Hanson, writing for a number of places, including Zero Hedge, who asks the question, do we have here a 50th anniversary war? And it begins by asking another question, just why did Hamas stage a long-planned, obviously carefully executed and multifaceted attack on Israeli towns, soldiers, and civilians, one designed to explicitly instill terror by executing non-combatants, taking hostages, and even desecrating the bodies of the dead? And just how were the killers able to enter Israel proper in enough numbers to kill what could be hundreds, maybe thousands, and certainly wound what is already into the thousands? A, he says, radical Palestinians ostensibly wanted to stop any rumored rapprochement between the Gulf monarchies, the traditional source of much of their cash, and Israel, by forcing the issue of Arab solidarity in times of war, especially via waging a gruesome attack aimed at civilians and encompassing executions and hostage-taking. Iran likely was the driving force to prompt this war, given that its greatest fear is a Sunni Arab-Israeli rapprochement. And B, Arab forces have only had success against Israel through these so-called surprise attacks during major Israeli holidays, such as the Yom Kippur War. We've already talked about that today, folks.
And says Hansen, i.e., was it any accident that the present attack began almost 50 years, almost to the day? Now, he points to the Roman calendar, not the Hebrew calendar, but it was October 6, 1973, that began the Yom Kippur War. And so now they struck again this Saturday during Simchat Torah, the feast that comes at the end of the Jewish celebration of Sukkot, he notes, in hopes that others will join in, as happened in 1973. Oh, yeah, and so much for Arab warnings that Westerners had better not even think about conducting war during their precious Ramadan. Finally, C, Hamas may have even reckoned that recent Israeli turmoil and mass leftist street protests over proposed so-called reforms of the Israeli Supreme Court had led to permanent internal divisions and thus a climate of domestic distraction, if not an outright erosion of any deterrence. But more importantly, continues Victor Davis Hansen, in a larger sense, it's the Biden-Fuhrer regime that's contributed both to the notion that Hamas was a legitimate Middle East player and to the perception that the U.S. was somehow backing away from its traditional support for Israel, to the delight of Hamas, and indeed much of the left in this nation, based on the following, he says, inexplicable policies. Number one. In February, the unbelievably traitorous so-called Secretary of State, Blinken, had bragged that not only had the Biden-Fuhrer resumed massive aid to the PLA that had been canceled by Trump, but cumulatively had transferred $1 billion, even as Palestinian authorities bragged that they would continue to pay bounties to the families of what they called martyrs, i.e. those killed while conducting terrorist attacks against Israel, and millions of American fiat bucks also went into where else? Gaza, run by Hamas. During the Biden-Fuhrer's efforts to keep mostly quiet the resumption of such inexplicable support. In this regard, says Hansen, note the current shameful State Department, Office of Palestinian Affairs in the U.S., and their website, and the news release that was posted after the attack on Sabbath. It ended with this quite embarrassing, morally equivalent admonition. Quote, we urged all sides to refrain from violence and retaliatory attacks. Terror and violence solve nothing. All sides, says Hansen, refrain from retaliatory attacks? Yeah, sure. So Israel is the moral equivalent of terrorists executing civilians and then brutalizing their corpses, he says, and the IDF is somehow supposed to sit by quietly and not retaliate against those killers? Yeah, he notes the Biden-Fuhrer State Department insanity cannot stand. So he says, and it turns out he was correct, folks, expect some apparatchik to take down this Munich-like posting as soon as possible. It didn't take long. Number two, the Biden-Fuhrer regime has recently released some $6 billion, and we've heard about this, but he repeats it because it's worthwhile to do so, to Iran through a so-called prison swap deal that had South Korea hand over embargoed Iranian money to Qatar, despite Tehran's increased anti-Israeli rhetoric and its loud brag about escalation. So, says Victor Davis Hansen, we ought to assume that money for rockets, Hamas claims that they've already launched over 5,000, remember, and that they have, listen to this, folks, received 100,000 of them via the Damascus airport and other weapons that were in general supplied by Iran, which again is almost certainly the chief catalyst for this so-called surprise attack. And finally, number three, almost immediately after the installation of the Biden-Fuhrer, he mobilized, or at least those that were pulling his strings had him mobilize, to resume the bankrupt Iran deal. And in its own unhinged fashion, he appointed the anti-Israeli bigot, pro-Iranian journalist Robert Malley as America's chief negotiator. And now, he says, note that Malley is under FBI, what they call investigation, yeah, sure, for security breaches involving the disclosure of classified U.S. documents and also for allegedly helping pro-Iranian activists and propagandists land influential billets inside the U.S. government in occupation. In short, he says, there was a general Hamas and Iranian perception that the Biden-Fuhrer regime had done exactly what its puppet masters, and in fact, it's the O-Biden regime, remember? Obama's calling the shots, and they both know it. The discredited Obama madness of empowering Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas. That discredited agenda, says Victor Davis Hansen, was to balance, they put it in quotes, the power of Israel and the moderate Arab governments in order to achieve creative tension, exacerbated by Biden's loathing of the government of Benjamin Netanyahu, who's been snubbed by Biden and never invited for an official visit. Well, maybe that'll change today. Well, anyway, it says, note as well that the Biden-Fuhrer has siphoned off key weapons and and munitions from stockpiles actually inside Israel at one point in order to transfer them to, well, guess where? Ukraine. The so-called War Reserve Ammunition Israel is all but depleted. And it's just the sort of weapons that might be needed in the present crisis. So we can see all kinds of chicanery afoot on that score, folks. Is there not a pattern here, says Victor Davis Hanson? Because upon the ascension of Biden and his woke military agenda, we saw all of the following. The complete humiliation of the U.S. in Kabul and its most shameful flight in 50 years, as well as the greatest abandonment of military equipment and munitions in its history, followed by the opportunistic invasion of Ukraine by Vladimir Putin, and followed by, in turn, China's new belligerence and escalating threats to Taiwan, followed by Turkey's new de facto alliance with Russia and recent drone encounters with the U.S. Air Force in Syria, followed by the Hamas-Iranian-inspired attack on Israel, with more to come almost immediately. So what to expect? The usual Hamas terrorist selling and or execution of Israeli hostages, the use of Israeli hostages as human shields in Gaza, the bargaining and sale of the remains of Israeli dead, the occasional killing of Jews inside Israel by Arabs who falsely believe there'll be a winning Mideast-wide existential war against Israel, and finally, a devastating Israeli counter-response that will eventually earn a rebuke from the U.S. Big Brother government. As you might suspect, and your host has been essentially leading up to now for quite a while, there are more and more people asking the unbelievably obvious question. How the hell could some of the most vaunted so-called intelligence agencies on planet Earth have missed such a massive mobilization and military attack across a well-defended border as opposed to what's in the southern U.S.? Answer, nobody is really buying it. Writing for the Gateway Pundit, Kash Patel puts it this way. Instead of analyzing how the world's supreme intelligence agencies and superpowers managed to miss Hamas's attack on Israel, the media is instead sensationalizing its actuality, which is the scary part. It's not a miss. It's a deliberate act of weaponization. Hey, what haven't they weaponized? By the Biden-Fuhrer regime of, this time, the national security apparatus, the so-called intelligence community, like our own National Command Authority, is directed, at least allegedly, by one thing, the commander-in-chief. Well, not this one. We know he's senile, and a potted plant could probably make better decisions. But somebody, at least, is pulling the puppet strings. Whether you grow its size is a red herring. When you reorient thousands of career individuals trained to detect prospects for war, you end up having less personnel and capacity detecting the threat environment. It's simple. There's only so much money, machines, and manning to direct against our enemies. And it looks like what they really consider the enemy, of course, are MAGA hat wearers and soccer moms. Anybody, in other words, that could actually read that Constitution thing back when it mattered. I know firsthand, he said, that during the Trump administration, our national intelligence priorities were foreign terrorist organizations and defeating a nuclear Iran. We had specific cells and groups within the IC dedicated to groups like Hamas and Iran. They were the top-tier priorities. Trump made the mission simple, defending against our enemies, and we used all options, covert and overt. Well, folks, here I'll depart from the text and just suggest, isn't it pretty clear that they think they know who the enemy are? And yes, it is us. If you just ask, why isn't the Hunter Biden laptop from hell considered an intelligence failure, you'll have your answer. Now that we're a couple of days in, folks, I do think one of the big takeaways here ought to be, what is it that Americans can learn from the latest repeat of history, whether you want to call it more like 9/11 or more like Pearl Harbor? It certainly looks like something far worse than just a massive and even unbelievable intelligence failure by what was supposed to be one of the most vaunted intelligence services and sets of agencies in the world, Mossad and Shin Bet. And obviously not that the CIA or any of the vaunted three-letter so-called American intelligence agencies had a clue what was going on, or at least were willing to tell them either. Although I guess, in fairness, if I was Israeli intelligence, given what I've seen out of the Biden-Fuhrer and the idiots running that regime, I wouldn't trust them either. But Leo Holman is among those asking the question that literally every American should be asking today. Could this be an object lesson for us, whether it comes to the border or the Second Amendment? By now, he begins, you've all seen the horrifying images from Israel over the weekend, people being murdered in their own homes, women being pulled out of their vehicles by their hair and raped, men being dragged behind vehicles to their death, spat upon, executed, other people with their babies even, being hauled away on motorcycles to who knows what, but we can probably guess. The victims called the police and the military, which didn't arrive on most of the bloody scenes, for a couple hours or more. Over 250 young kids were killed at a, well, admittedly, place that they shouldn't have been anyway, a rave right there on the border with Gaza. Most of them didn't live to talk about it, but quite a few looked like they may have been kidnapped. Over 40 babies were slaughtered, a number of them beheaded, and I got to admit it, folks, as revolting as it is to even ponder, that sounds like something that New York City's mayor would be really thrilled about. This, let's face it, is evil, the likes of which Americans have literally been prepped for now for quite some time. Says a piece in the Daily Mail, Israeli soldiers were seen comforting each other after witnessing horrors, including the bodies of entire families gunned down in their beds. Said Israeli Major General Itai Varuv of the horrific scene, quote, you see the babies, the mothers, the fathers in their bedrooms, in their protection rooms, and how the terrorist kills them. It's not a war. It's not a battlefield. It's a massacre. It's a terror activity, unquote. Looking at all the images and the carnage, says Leo Holman, many of us ask the obvious question, why didn't the Israelis fight back? And many of us, he continues, myself included, assumed that given Israel's been surrounded on all sides by such vicious enemies, and some of them live in such close proximity to a border with millions of people that want them dead, well, we might have assumed that all Israelis live with firearms at the ready in all of their homes and houses and vehicles. That assumption would be wrong, arguably dead wrong. According to my sources, continues Holman, the Israeli government makes its citizens jump through so many hoops, almost Biden-Führer-like, that only about 2.6% of Israeli citizens actually own a pistol, and it's virtually impossible to own a rifle. Yes, if you're among the ranks of retired military, you are allowed to own a rifle, but you cannot store it in your home unless you're among the top elite commandos. That answers the question, sort of, why didn't they fight back? They were left as sitting ducks by their own government leaders, who are, frankly, almost as corrupt as the scumbags in the swamp in Washington. They're not in office to protect the people. And indeed, the more we learn about it, the more it looks like the people were being set up as guinea pigs or maybe live bait for what's been intended to happen and is now in play. And because these leaders are so corrupt, says Holman, they fear the people, and the first order of business for any corrupt government that no longer represents the interests of the people is to disarm them. You can't trust a body politic with weapons if you're screwing them so royally that thievery disguised as heavy taxation weighed against the middle and lower classes is the raison d'etre of the three-letter enforcement agencies. You better disarm them, and that's exactly what the Israeli government did to those people who were slaughtered in 29 communities over this past Holy Day weekend. At this point, he includes a video from Dave Kohler, U.S. Army veteran from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, who explains that we'd better be thankful, at least for now, that we still have a bit of the Second Amendment left in America, because our own corrupt politicians would love nothing better than to eliminate it and disarm us too, so that they can do exactly to us what's being done to the Israelis. American society, says Holman, is not that different from Israel. We still have lunatic politicians seeking to destroy our own way of life and take away our freedoms. At the same time, we have many, I would say many, many folks, and they're cultivating more daily in the indoctrination centers, and at the same time importing them across the southern border too, especially in these cesspool cities, who are allowed to roam free with little risk of extended incarceration or, much less, capital punishment at the scene of the crime from the victims they're able to rob, rape, and kill in those disarmed gun-free killing zones. The border's been left wide open so that more and more criminals can continue to join the ranks, including folks, and let's not kid ourselves, foreign militaries. Refugees from nations that hate us have been imported since the 1980s, but especially of late, legally and with the full support of the various traitors in Congress. The same element that butchered those Jews in Israel is here in America, and they will turn on us. Well, some of us would suggest they already have. It's just not quite as obvious yet as it is when people come paragliding in and start opening fire. And we're already seeing evidence, says Holman, with the pro-Hamas rallies being held simultaneously now in major cities across the USA. All we have left to rely on for our own protection is our personal defensive weapons, our plans, and, of course, our faith in God. When you need the police, you can rest assured they won't be there to protect you. And don't even think about the gay LGBTQIA++ Lloyd Austin military. They've been totally infiltrated, and their members answer to a command structure that begins in the White Whorehouse. And need I say more? The Second Amendment, says Holman in conclusion, is the final frontier for American freedom lovers. The First Amendment has been under under intense attack for years. It's pretty much a dead letter as well. And it's been extremely watered down over the last three or four to the point where it's, at best, hanging by a thread. The globalists who run Washington and many state capitals are now gunning for what's left of the Second Amendment. And once that's gone, there's literally nothing left. History suggests over and over again how that works out. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.